welcome to this special edition of the Situation Report. I'm going to be joined here in just a second by Matt Bracken. And we have decided to do a one-on-one today. I haven't done a one-on-one with him for a while, but I want to do a one-on-one with him so that we could talk through the Green Flag event, talk through some other things we're seeing, including AI. So I'll bring him on in just a second. We're here with Matt Bracken. Today's the 17th of May, 2024. So Matt, it's good to have you back again. I just listened to your Coffee to Mike interview, so we got lots of ground to cover. What I want to start with is your assessment of the situation in Ukraine, because I think both of us have a view of the situation there. And we were just talking before the show about the situation. It's always the 10 minutes of Matt Bracken gold before we get started. But where do you see things at in Ukraine right now?
Russia's winning. I mean, you know, there are certain parallels for an American that would be like the North versus the South in the Civil War. You know, that you can say, yeah, one Confederate can lick five Yankees, but there's 10 Yankees, you know, and they got all the factories. So you've got to like smuggle in a gun, a cannon from France or Britain. And meanwhile, they're making 100 cannons a day in, you know, Connecticut, and shipping them down on railroads. So just the industrial pace of arming Russia is outstripping the West. We can talk a bunch of bullshit, but our artillery plants are like, you know, Korean War vintage, cobbled together and trying to update them and speed them up, trying to like, you know, get a very old fashioned production line to move faster. And the Russians have very state-of-the-art production lines, and they're outbuilding everybody in terms of you know, drones, armored vehicles. Their electronic warfare is the best in the world. Their anti-aircraft is the best in the world. I would defy those F-16s to try to get, you know, within glide bomb range of Russian lines. I don't think they'll survive. You know, the Russians are doing an excellent job of warfare here. And just because we haven't seen a breakout blitzkrieg, you know, like a Operation Desert Storm, our paradigms are no longer significantly apropos at all. Our paradigms are obsolete. Going against the Iraqi Republican Guard is like an NFL team going against a high school team and then passing out all the medals. I got 10 touchdowns.
How far do you think they'll go? Because they're on the move right now, so I'm curious to see how far you think they're going to go.
They're being cautious. They don't want a lot of casualties because the war is still pretty popular in Russia. I mean, Putin was reelected, and you can say, well, so is, you know, every communist leader. But if you just poll Russians, he's got like an 80% approval. So, I mean, you can say he's a dictator or not, but, you know, he's a popular leader. And I think that right now there are a few cities. Cities are like the only real defensive obstacles that you can have today. After you evacuate the civilians, the vertical and underground infrastructure is like a built-in fortification. But after a couple more small cities, there's nothing to the Dnieper River. And I think that history is going to show that they should have taken the deals that were on offer when Boris Johnson went to Turkey and scuttled that peace deal, because it would have basically been Russia keeps Crimea, and Crimea was always Russian until Khrushchev, who was Ukrainian, gave Crimea to Ukraine inside of the USSR, which it would have been no different than Eisenhower giving Long Island to Connecticut. Who gives a damn, right? Did the world care in 1970 or 80? Oh, Crimea, which was Russian since Catherine the Great, before we had a constitution, Crimea has been transferred by Khrushchev, who's Ukrainian, to Ukraine. Who cares? It only mattered after the breakup of the Soviet Union, when this region, the Ukraine, my whole life it was called the Ukraine, because the Ukraine means the frontier or the borderland. There was never a country called Ukraine until 1991. And by a twist of history, Crimea fell into Ukraine, but it was always Russian. And so were the so is the eastern quarter of Ukraine. That's why it was called the Russian Donbass. So Ukraine could have had just recognized Russian rights in the Russian Donbass, recognize that Crimea is always going to be part of Russia, because Crimea has Sevastopol. They pronounce it the different way than we do. We say Sevastopol. Anyway, Sevastopol to the Russians is more important than San Diego Naval Base or Norfolk Naval Base to America. So we have multiple naval bases on the West and East Coast. Russia only has Crimea, Sevastopol. So saying that Crimea must be part of Ukraine and Ukraine is going to become part of NATO is like saying San Diego is going to become part of Mexico and a Chinese base. We would never tolerate it. That would be like, no way. We'll go to, before, you know, if we did a color revolution in Mexico and they had a referendum in California and they decided we want to be part of Mexico and San Diego is going to be a Chinese naval base, we would say, you must be on drugs. We are never going to tolerate that. So Russian Crimea, Russian Donbass, we're always going to stay Russian. And the Ukraine could have just kept itself as Ukraine, giving, you know, some autonomy to the eastern Donbass provinces, recognizing that Crimea is part of Russia. Instead, their NATO mentors and allies and advisors told them, no, we will arm you forever. We will back you forever until you drive the Russians out of the Russian Donbass and drive the Russians out of Russian Crimea.
What do you think about Odessa? Because Odessa is Russian too.
It's a question mark because psychologically, Odessa, as part of the Maidan coup, had one of the worst flashpoints, which is very emotional for Russians, which was the trade union building being burned by Ukrainian NATO friends, you know, that like to wear swastikas and death's heads. They burned that like gleefully, people jumping out of windows on fire. So to the Russians, Odessa is pretty sticky. Odessa was founded also by Catherine the Great.
That's why I asked about it.
Yeah. And that whole coast. So, but it is on the other side of the, against that, it's on the other side of the Dnieper River. So if there's a peace deal, when you're playing your negotiating points in a peace deal, the Russians will probably go into it saying, we must have a corridor all the way over to Transnistria, and including Odessa, which Catherine the Great founded. And it's very emotional for us because of what happened during the Maidan coup. So we want all of that. And in the give and take, I think that they're going to wind up, because in some ways, geographically, it makes sense to just make the Danube East Bank, West Bank. So the Russians may say, it grieves us, but we're going to allow Ukraine to have a port on the Black Sea, if that's the cost of peace. Because if the Ukraine or the Ukraine has no port on the Black Sea, it's not a real country. I mean, they've got.
Can you, given the fact that that NATO and the U.S. as well as Britain have not been, you know, have not honored any of the agreements they've made all the way back to the 90s, and this being an existential fight for Russia, do you honestly see them giving up Odessa? I can see them.
I see it in the context of a finally, maybe say Trump comes in and he's like, you know, assuming there's not like just another whole topic, gigantic George Floyd summer riots times 10, because Trump is Hitler. I mean, the liberal mainstream media is doing cover photos where he's got like a Hitler mustache, right?
Yeah, the propaganda is, they're hard at work doing propaganda.
Very hard.
Yeah, but if propaganda too.
If Trump gets a chance, I think Trump will say, and maybe Trump won't go because he's president, but there are in history, this has happened. I think World War I, there were a couple of like independent diplomatic efforts where people, you know, so Trump might send somebody very respected and say, we're going to get this war over with. Trump says, I'll finish this war in, 24 hours. I think what he means is we'll have like in Switzerland or in Austria, we'll have peace talks. We're going to have serious peace talks, serious people. And the Russians will come in saying, we want all of these things. And in order to have a negotiating position, you have to say our bottom line is more than you really expect to get. So I can see them giving away Odessa for the sake of a peace deal, because that's probably the best deal that Ukraine is going to get, is West Bank of Dnieper, Kiev. Kharkov will be Russian. It was a Russian city, always was. West Bank of Dnieper, all the way west, and a port, Odessa. And the Russians will say, you really robbed us. You got a good deal. Take it. But put it in the context that 2 years ago, Ukraine could have just given some, special autonomous region to the Russian Donbass Eastern Quarter and recognize that Crimea was always Russian. Because Russia will never, ever, any Western diplomat that says, we're going to stay until, we're going to keep the fight up until Crimea is part of Ukraine, is either like a complete retard, or they're just a lying, piece of crap, because Russia will never give up Ukraine. Just like we would never give up San Diego to a Chinese coup in Mexico.
I don't know. Oh. These days, I Gavin Newsom would do that.
He might. Yeah, he might. But I mean, the America that we knew would never just say, we're going to give you Alaska back to the Russians. I mean, it would be easier for us to give Alaska back to the Russians than for Crimea to not be Russian. Alaska going back to Russia, actually, Crimea has been Russian longer than Alaska has been American. Longer. So much longer, like a century longer.
Yeah, it's been around for a long
time. Or we'll give Hawaii to China.
Right? Yeah, when
this Pearl Harbor can be a Chinese naval base. Never going to happen.
Yeah, when this first started, I did a show and I was talking about the parts of the Donbass that they moved into were all ethnic Russian areas. They were not Ukrainian areas. And I contended then, the same that I contend now, that and you talked about it before the show, they're moving into the ethnic Russian areas. They're going to occupy the ethnic Russian areas. And they'll leave the rest of the Ukrainian areas for the most part, because like you said, they don't want to occupy it.
Well, it's a river. A river makes things fairly simple. Not completely, because the Dnieper region is like its own integrated system, in much the way that the Mississippi River, it would be hard to divide the Mississippi River and say, east of Mississippi is all one country, west of Mississippi is all another country, and we're putting barbed wire down the middle, because it's the economies are so integrated there, that there's factories on both sides, that like we take the agricultural or mineral product from this side and shoot it on barges right across to that side to the factory, which is there's like nothing cheaper in the world than moving corn by a barge. There's no cheaper way, right? Yeah. It's like cheaper than putting it on trucks. It's cheaper than putting it on a railroad. You have all the agricultural products coming down a chute into a giant barge. It goes a couple miles to the chicken plant. So it's not as simple as just saying the Dnieper will be divided. but geographically it works, then it, and it, and it gives you hope in the future for saying, we'll make the Dnieper basin a special economic zone where we have, we allow more economic harmony, even though, you know, that's Kiev, West Ukraine, this is Russia, East Ukraine. But you can't just split that economy. Even if you just, if you split that economy, the Ukrainian side suffers drastically. Now, if the Russians, and there can be a lot of more wild cards in this, because, you know, we're seeing like Ukraine is asking for NATO troops directly in Ukraine, not fighting, right, but in support in the rear. And Russia is very clearly Lavrov, another very smart guy, well-spoken. Lavrov is saying, you bring any NATO troops into Ukraine, they're a target, period. Don't think like, you know, your NATO supply depot is not going to be, you know, Kinjal missiled. It will be. So there's
Before we literally, you and I talked about this on the round table about 3 weeks, 4 weeks ago, when what's that cuck's name in Paris, in France?
Macron.
Macron was talking about we should send forces in. That was the premise of the entire conversation, was that they'd move Ukrainian CSS, or, you know, sustainment folks forward, turn them into fighters, and NATO would take over the logistics trains. And
then they're targets. And supposedly Macron sent the French Foreign Legion in, which is, you know, the French Foreign Legion is meant for, like, you know, Mali and Niger. It's not meant for ground shock troop modern industrial warfare.
Yeah, how's that going to work? Not very well.
No, and that's pretty bad for French Foreign Legion recruitment, I would imagine.
Absolutely. Well, let's move on to something, because we could talk about Ukraine all day. And you know, what's funny is that we've talked about it several times on the roundtable. And what always comes out of the conversation is this conversation around where is NATO going to play? And they keep saying they're going to, and then they pull out. I think in a few more weeks, we'll see what's what and what's the rhetoric, right? The rhetoric is always stronger than the action. So I want you to talk about green flags, because that interview with Mike Ferris, which, great guy, by the way, you talked about green flag operations. That term's been around for a long time in the information space. It's meant a bunch of different things over time. But I think in the context of Vox, which, by the way, I've followed that site off and on for years, and I think it's interesting that article
intelligent.
Yeah. So, and in the context of where you see this
and he shit post.
Yeah, he doesn't shit post at all. No. So let's just pick a place to start, because there's a lot there.
I think this is probably, you know, the Scythians and the Assyrians were probably, you know, talking about green flag operations 5,000 years ago. I think it's like embedded in military and civilian warfare. If the leadership of a country really wants to get their country into a war, I'm thinking Woodrow Wilson in 1917 or Franklin Delano Roosevelt in 1940, you're not going to get America to go into a land war in Europe or Asia by writing op-eds, by doing fireside chats, okay? You need a provocation that's going to, you know, ramp the psychological fury of the country into a war, you know, fever. And once you do that, not only do most Americans want to like join the military and go kill the Japs or go kill the Krauts, but you also give a reason to shut up everybody else. So for World War I and World War II, there were a lot of Germans in America that were like, hands off, you know, like, this ain't our war. Listen to George Washington. Don't get involved in foreign entanglements, right? Be a friend to all, but don't go looking for monsters to slay. Well, if you really believe that it's in your national interest to get into the war, you've got to give people a reason to get behind you. And that's even aside from saying how many people are whispering into a Wilson or an FDR's ear that, you know, the economy's not that great and we could like have a lot more industrial activity and our GDP will go up. Because you hear that argument about Ukraine. Oh, these are great jobs in America building artillery shells, you know, and our GDP will increase. It's like, oh, great, just blood money, but that's okay. So taking the military-industrial complex component out of it, if you're just a president and you want your country to go to war that doesn't involve America, then America has to have a mass casualty drill. So just going back at least to the Spanish-American War, early dreadnought battleship called the Maine blew up in Havana Harbor. That was probably not sabotage. It was probably an accident because, you know, high pressure metallurgy was not very well understood. They didn't really, you know, they didn't have a way to test things the way we do today. So they probably,
I think it was a fire in the coal bunkers is what it was.
But it led to a boiler explosion because the ship blew up.
Yeah.
Right. But there were one of the biggest casualties of the Civil War was after Appomattox, when Union prisoners were on a big, I think it was called the Sultana or the Sultan, were on like a gigantic paddle wheel boat. And they had been freed from POW camps in the South, and they're going up the Mississippi to be repatriated. And there was a boiler explosion, and like, you know, 1,000 Union POWs and others died. It's a huge mass casualty because they just didn't understand boilers that well. I mean, they had the theory, make something real hot and turn things, but they didn't. Right. But this kind of iron or that kind of iron.
Make shit hot. You know, it turns things.
Are brass bolts the same as steel bolts? Right.
That's funny.
Can we make these bolts out of, you know, iron rivets, or do you need steel rivets? They were working that crap out. So the Maine blows up, and it was used in what was the yellow press mainstream media of the day. What's the name of the media empire? The media empire. Anyway, it doesn't matter. The
I know media you're talking about. He had the big estate out in California.
The Hearst Empire was like, remember the Maine? It was like Spanish frogmen. Spanish frogmen put a mine on a Maine. They had no proof for this, but it worked. You know, it got us join the army, kill the Spanish, right? Teddy Roosevelt, Rough Riders. Let's go. So Lusitania is like 1917. Germany put ads in the newspapers saying a state of war exists. Don't get on that ship. We're warning you. Because cruise ships in wartime were used as troop transports, because a cruise liner that could carry, you know, 1,000 civilians could carry 5,000 troops. You know, you just put 5 guys in each room. You know, they're soldiers. And they don't need a convoy because they're 10 times faster than a submarine. So you can just like New York to London, like taking the Concorde, right? Compared to a U-boat that can go like 5 knots underwater and 10 knots on the surface. But they sent it straight underneath of Ireland, where like every U-boat had been reported consistently. There was no internet, obviously. There was wartime censorship even before the Lusitania, but it was known to the naval authorities that if you wanted this Lusitania to be sunk, send it right underneath of Ireland. It will be sunk. And it was. And then it was, remember the Lusitania, everybody join the army. All you Germans, shut up. You know, are you for the Kaiser? I mean, that was, they had the crass propaganda then of Germans in Stahlhelms with the spike on top bayoneting babies, right? That was like cartoon memes of the day.
All the way back to the Revolutionary War, they used that image.
Right, bayoneting babies.
Yep.
And there was no counter argument. There was no internet fact checking or anything else. So it's like, wow, we got to go stop that Kaiser. World War II, Pearl Harbor, same thing. We had pretty much broken the Japanese codes by then. At a very high level, they had to know that Pearl Harbor was like targeted. And they did not tell the commanders at Pearl Harbor, you're under a great threat. Why don't you disperse those airplanes? Why don't you, you know, do certain things? They didn't. When, you know, the radar saw the Japanese planes coming in, they thought they were a flight coming from California. You know, they didn't even tell them, because if you want a green flag to be successful, it has to be bloody and gory, and the people who are killed have to really believe it. And so that leads us, well, I guess Tonkin Gulf in a sense is similar. It, 1965. We were chest bumping North Vietnam. We were sending American destroyers to, like, you know, 1 mile off their territorial limit. And we were also, they were overwatching patrol boats that were putting saboteurs ashore to, like, blow up things in North Vietnam while there's an American ship right there. So that's like, come on, buddy, what you going to do about it? You know, punch me, throw the first punch, you know, chest bump. So that's what Tonkin Gulf was. Americans aren't excited about going to war in Vietnam. We need something. So Tonkin Gulf was kind of a lame excuse, but it was enough. And then we were, you know, dropping the main Marine forces into Da Nang and so forth. And Vietnam got off on the higher level. And then 9/11, there's a, you know, I'm not one that thinks that the buildings were demolished. I don't want to get, that's a whole another rabbit hole. But I think that there's reason to suspect people knew. You know, there were these Muhammad Atta guys taking 747 lessons and didn't care about landing, you know? So a green flag is, for the greater good, we have to allow something to happen, which will hurt us in the short run, but will be a, you know, overall victory in the greater war. And it's standard tactics from, you know, from company and platoon level to division and brigade level, to send a force out on a diversionary operation to draw the enemy force in that direction. And you don't tell the company or battalion commander on the diversionary operation, dude, you're a kamikaze. Fight hard. Make sure your will's in order. See you in Valhalla. You tell him, you just make it to that bridge and hold it, and the Rangers will be parachuting in tomorrow. But they're not. You're just, yeah. It's like you're a pawn. It's a chessboard and you're a pawn.
So okay? who do you see the, so if I'm hearing you right, you're saying that, well, I've heard a couple of things. So I've heard a long time ago that you have to be somewhat of a psychopath to be in a position of power and run a country. You have to be willing to make decisions to burn your own people.
It seems like that is very common.
Yeah.
And then, even Jordan Peterson in many Jordan Peterson interviews, even unprompted, he brings up the psychopathic element, mm-hmm. You know, the element that psychopathy plays in history. And he even says, and I didn't even know this before listening to some Jordan Peterson, one of the highest percentages of psychopathy is surgeons.
Yeah, because they have God complexes. Yep, I've heard that too. That's common. So, but who do you think the boogeyman's going to be? Right, we always have a boogeyman. It doesn't matter where we are in history, right?
And I think the traitors who are misleading our country, traitors and fools. There's like 90% fools, 10% traitors. Maybe there's a couple percent patriots that are shouting in the wilderness, but. The traitors are trying to wreck our country. You know, they deliberately pushed Russia and China together. They're not working for our interest. They deliberately opened the border to mass invasion, not only by low IQ third world people that don't speak English or Spanish, right? Now we got to like have elementary school teachers that like can translate Congolese.
Yeah,
really?
Multilingual, right? Yeah.
And so they're not working for our interest. They're working against our interest. But they're also allowing in, you know, Syrian and Chinese sabotage specialists, right? A lot of these base incursions that we've been seeing for like the last 5 years, they're definitely probes, right? They're security probes. How far can you bullshit your way into an American base? How far can you get? Like, I have pizza. Can I get onto a base?
But, yeah, DoorDash. That was one I read this morning.
But I also think that these are a these are morale operations. What I mean by that is the person who, and Michael Yon interviewed one of these guys down in Darien, was amazing, like last year when he just came out of the jungle and he was very vulnerable late at night, all mosquito bitten. So when you get deported, because you sneak into a base, including not even through the gate, like over fences, you sneak into the gate and you get right to the fence of the most high secure communication security zone, right? The crypto area. And they finally arrest you. Well, what do they do with you? Do they beat the crap out of you? Do they pull your fingernails out? No. They give you your Miranda rights and then they send you back to China in a couple weeks. Well, when you get back to China, what are you going to do back in China? You're going to put your uniform on and you're going to go to the spy academy where there's 1,000 spy recruits out in the audience and you're going to tell your story and everybody's laughing. I went right on to the base. I got all the way to here. The country, America, is a joke. Don't fear. When you get sent to America, it's like being sent into, you know, a whorehouse run by retards. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. Well, you look at the crime rates and what's happening with the repeat offenders. They're completely not afraid of our legal system at all.
No, but the Chinese go back to China and they're recruiting, or they're morale officers. They get a promotion, they got two bars now, and they're talking to the, you know, 500 second year spy academy guys. And they're saying, I did this. Here's the map. I got right, you know, to here, to here, to here. I hitchhiked. I took a cab. I got a job. I said my name was Wan Ting. They gave me money. They gave me an EBT card. They gave me a driver license. I got a gun permit. I carried a gun. America's a joke. When you go to America, celebrate. It's like wide open. Nobody will stop you.
Yeah.
So that's what some of these guys, when they get back to China, I know that's what they're doing. If I was a SEAL team guy in that kind of context, going against a decaying empire, a rotting, decaying empire that's like promoting transgenderism in their military, where their military is like jogging behind the rainbow flag. I mean, what would you do? What would you think? You'd say this country's a fucking joke. It's like ready to fall. So when you get sent to America on a sabotage mission, welcome it.
How much of this invasion do you think China has a play in? I don't mean from the perspective of them.
I think they've tailgated onto it very smartly.
You don't
in
think
like with, say the last 2 years and increasingly.
You don't think with all the connections that Biden has to China that he's not taking orders from Xi on?
No question. But Biden's not running anything.
Right. But you know what I mean, right? That
believers
that are communists at the top.
It's not just the spies. It's not just the sabotage cadres coming across the border from Syria or from China. You know, the guy that's actually going to like, you know, he doesn't know anything. He's just being told when you get this code, you're going to go to this restaurant, behind the restaurant, get in the white van. They'll give you a weapon. They'll give you a demo pack. Do whatever they tell you. The guys that are driving the van that have the safe house, they've been here for years. What they're doing is filling out the van with the pack and gun carriers. That's who's coming across the border now. So they've been planning this for a long time. They just can't believe their luck that the stars have lined up in such a way that a guy like Alejandro Mayorkas, you know, who was a general for Hayas, is now a field marshal in charge of America's security. They're like, is this reality or are they luring us into a trap? No, this is reality. You can, let's just, if we've got, you know, 100 safe house operators with crypto and comms, you know, and blasting caps, send in 10,000 foot soldiers, because that guy could use 100 foot soldiers and take out many more targets the night he's given the code. So yeah, no matter what happens, if we go kinetic over Taiwan or anything else, no matter what happens overseas, it won't be like 1941, right? Oh, the Philippines, Singapore is falling. Terrible things are happening 5,000 miles away. It's going to be, we fight China kinetically anywhere, our power is going to go out. Our bridges are going to be blown. And you don't have to blow up a bridge. All you have to do is hijack a gasoline tanker with a pistol, drive it onto a bridge and ignite it. That's all you got to do. What happened in Baltimore, they can do 100 times in one night. And now they've got enough troops to do that. So as soon as it push comes to shove and America's like reinforcing Taiwan, there's a battle of Taiwan Straits, our power is going to go out. I mean, just...
I think it's going to be before that, but...
I'm just saying it's a contingency. No matter what happens, we go kinetic with China.
Yeah.
Our power goes up. Yeah. No matter what happens, Iran goes kinetic with Israel, ballistic missile city of battle, war of cities with ballistic missiles. Our power goes up.
Yeah. I see where you're going with that. It took me a second to keep up with you. Let me, God, there's so many ways we could go, so many different directions we could go with this. But the one I really want to go down is, let's say China does do a green flag event. Do you actually think that our press...
What do you mean China does one?
So let's say China does some kind of an attack here that could be directly linked to China. And do you think our press would even, especially how compromised they are? I think that in some senses
they already have. They found these like biological weapon labs out in California.
That's where I was going with it. So I figured
they got like hundreds of monkeys and chickens in cages. They're feeding them all kind of viruses. And it's like, no problem. Out of the news in 24 hours.
The reason why I bring that up is that is a green flag event. Those bio labs are green flag. That's can be considered a green flag.
And these grow operations, imagine how pathetic your country is when your cover for your war mission is we're just a marijuana grow operation. Okay. Mm-hmm. You're so pathetic as a country. Illegal aliens come in, they buy 20 of these giant wedding tents. Okay. The big white tents that are like 40 feet long. They buy 20 of them in Maine and Missouri and, you know, Oklahoma.
Sit there and grow dope.
And that's your cover. Mm-hmm. Your cover is we're just growing marijuana, but in reality, you are a barracks in waiting. You know, You are a transit stop for the troops. You are a place where they've got containers filled with drones ready to fly onto our Air Force bases to land on the wing tanks and take out, you know, $20 million aircraft with $2,000 drones. And your cover is we're just a marijuana grow operation. That's like, oh, well, that's as far as they'll investigate. That's all they'll do. Meanwhile, you could be like bringing sex slaves through, you know, busloads. Who cares?
Or fentanyl.
Fentanyl. Who cares? Yeah. Right.
Yeah, I would propose that the green flags are probably already occurred and we don't even know it. And it wouldn't be attributed to China.
In that sense, yeah, like these grow operations are... They're not just growing marijuana. They are barracks. It's like, imagine you could just go to your adversary country and buy 100 acres, buy diesel fuel tanks and, you know, store them, buy giant propane tanks and store them, build a kitchen, build tents with bunk beds for 1,000 people. You can just do it in America.
Yeah.
And your cover is we're just growing marijuana.
You couldn't do it in China. They'd be all over you when you got off the plane. Same with Russia.
Oh.
They're watching everybody.
And one of the things that they've learned is the cheapest thing in the world, cheaper than a $5 hooker, is an American congressman. An American congressman in relative terms is cheaper than a $5 Tijuana hooker.
You know, I'm thinking of AOC right now. Just throwing that out.
And not just Democrats. There's plenty of Republicans.
Oh yeah. Lindsey
that
Graham.
Take the money.
Yeah. Lindsey Graham, all the rest of them.
So
yeah.
we're basically screwed. I'm laughing, but we're basically screwed. No matter what happens, whether it's a solar flare, coronal mass ejecta last week, or it's a cyber attack, or something we can't foresee, or we get spicy with China or Iran, when our power goes out, and the whole world knows this, they watch the videos. People are going into stores and ransacking stores for the hell of it, with the lights on, the water running, EBT card they can reload. Mm-hmm. They're so culturally destroyed that they're just walking up behind people in the street to punch them in the head or stab them or push them onto subway tracks. All any enemy of ours has to do is cut off our power and we'll do the rest of the job. We'll do the rest of the destruction.
I agree. How far away do you think we are from that? I think it's the summer. I really do. I don't think you and I have talked about this ad nauseum, right? So we won't rehash this, but I don't think we're getting the 24 election. I think this.
Yeah, and I think that they're definitely willing to go full Bolshevik revolution to keep Trump from being elected, or if he's elected, to keep him from taking any kind of real control. He may be elected, and maybe what he was doing is with going along with the, you know, more money for Ukraine, and maybe he's trying to signal I can be a team player. Don't deep state, give me some time. But if it looks like he's going to bring in like Steve Bannon and Peter Navarro, you know, to be on his reconciliation panel, I think they'll go full Bolshevik. Yeah. They'll unleash the hounds of hell. You know, they'll it's not necessarily that they'll say, okay, we're going to have Democrat-backed Antifa burning bridges. We'll have pro-Palestinian Gaza supporters burning the bridges because Trump wouldn't take the 500,000 Palestinians, whatever. So they'll muddy the waters. There are so many players now, jihadists, Chinese, South American high-tech criminal gangs, you know, the Mexican cartels. There are so many competing mafias in this country. You know, it's like every time there's a jewelry store robbery, you have to wonder which mafia was that we just let into the country.
Yeah. And I think the bigger question is going to be, you know, when, let's say we get to a point where we can clean this up, you and I know that that's going to take a long time, even if we get there, but you're going to literally have to be draconian.
That's the ending of my new novel. Cleaning it up is not going to happen. You know, I thought some of this was pretty far out there, but the more I've, you know, studied it alongside of Michael Young, when something happens, and we've never seen it on this scale, what's going to happen? You know, just as an example, Cromwell created the modern standing army. Before Cromwell, who was secular, kings raised armies like, oh, you know, we got to do something in France. All you dukes, you need to supply 50 knights and 100 footmen, whatever. But the standing army didn't exist. Cromwell created the standing army. The longbow took years of practice, great strength. You had to constantly practice. But they invented a crossbow. You could teach a guy a crossbow in like a weekend, how to wind up a crossbow and we're going to feed you, give you a job. You're going to be a professional soldier. They tried it out in Ireland. They took over Ireland. It's like 1600, I think, around then. And in like 30 years, half of the Irish were dead. They didn't set up gas chambers. They didn't set, you know, they didn't have machine gun pits. Just by disrupting the food cycle, the planting cycle, driving people off their land so that they're like huddling in the woods, freezing in the winter, getting sick. You know, estimates are like a third to, you know, maybe a third of the Irish died. And there was no extermination camp. that's when people grew all the food, like within sight of their house. You know, you had a pig, you had, you lived and walked where all your food was grown. Just by moving people off of their land temporarily and disrupting the planting cycle, a third of the Irish died. Now, 99% of the food we grow comes from, say, more than 100 miles away. I'll bet that's probably true, 95%. If you disrupt the supply chain cycle, America and every modern country goes into mass starvation. There are countries like Egypt and Nigeria where if a ship loaded with grain doesn't come in every month, the country will starve. So when you have globalists that are attacking fertilizer, attacking food production in general, attacking fossil fuels, they're trying to break these supply chains. They are trying to instigate a mass starvation. They think there are too many humans on the planet. And their goal is to have a reset. Michael Yan, studying famines historically, it's very common to have a 90% die-off because all the preppers go out in the Appalachians, every deer is killed that month. There's not a rat left in your city to eat. What do you eat after the last squirrel and rat has been caught and eaten? You eat each other. So 90% is where it will drop to. And then in that period, there's stuff growing out of the ground by itself, and you can achieve a new carrying capacity based on a lot of new growth and much less people. And the people are now spread out. You know, all the fighting's been done. That's what my new book begins, like 10 years after this, when we're just dealing with that 10%. And the 10% that are left are going to have no mercy for foreigners that don't speak English, for example. The 10% that are left, first, the cities will be completely depopulated.
I agree.
That's why I always ask, how much food do they grow in your zip code? You know, think about this. Your zip code has a wall put around it. And the only food, and your electricity is cut off and your water is cut off, unless you got a well that you can, you know, you can get out of the ground. So an 800-foot well with a big 110 electric ain't going to cut it. So put a fence or a wall around your county. You can only eat what's in your county. You'd better be in a county that can feed itself. If you're in New York City, it's going to be cannibalism in 1 week. I know it sounds horrible, but you know, this is history.
No, I wholeheartedly agree. And I think that, you know, because the piece you're not talking about is the people that have been jabbed. And
right. We don't know what that's another wild card. And there's some more wild cards. The nuclear power plants, when the nuke plants are not manned, you know, can they be scrammed to where they're just safe without a backup generator pumping cooling water in? Can how many nuclear power plants could the engineers say, we got to shut it down, buddy, in a safe way? Can the rods be moved into a position where, in the absence of cooling water, it won't go Chernobyl? There would be a lot of plants that just run away, like Fukushima and Chernobyl. And there won't be any effort like Chernobyl. Chernobyl was a big accident, obviously, but there was, and you can say, well, it was the Soviet Union, so they can just order troops to do whatever. There was a lot of great heroism among the Russians during the Soviet era. If you've seen any of the films like the K-19, The Widowmaker, it takes a real courageous person to save your buddies by going right into the radioactive plant inside of a submarine, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
To work for 5 minutes turning pipes, knowing that in 10 minutes your skin's going to be coming off and you're dead. And they pull that guy out of the reactor on the submarine, and the next guy's got to put on a suit and go in there knowing he's going to look just like that guy. Well, they did that in Chernobyl. They had guys being dropped off of helicopters onto the roof of Chernobyl, like with hoses and brooms. And they were all dead in a year.
Yeah. Some of them were dead sooner than that.
And sooner than that. But they didn't have guns to their head.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They didn't run away. They didn't hide. They didn't hide. You know, they said, my country is calling me and I got to do what I got to do. I mean, it's not that much different than, you know, that we had torpedo plane pilots in World War II that, you know, 90% didn't come back because it was like, you're just going to come low and slow with one torpedo. Good luck with that job. Yeah. So, I mean, people did it.
And TBD Devastator. I know exactly which airplane you're talking about. It's so, unreliable torpedoes even, and they still did it.
Right. Yeah, the torpedoes were going to bounce off the ship, but you're just a diversion for the dive bombers. But and they did their job. So what happens with all the you know, hundreds of reactors around the world that might be running away? You know, that's a whole zone. That's a whole zone that can be devastated.
I think the other piece to keep in mind, too, is I don't see China going into chaos because we go into chaos. I see China and Russia, even India, surviving this. Europe.
Yeah, China cannot feed itself without food from outside.
Well, they've taken over most of the food plants here. You don't.
Yeah, but that's assuming its ships are still running.
Well, that's true. That's a good point. Yeah. I just see us and Europe falling into chaos this year. I mean, Europe's almost there. This Caledonia thing, if this picks up pace, because the information war around is amazing. Watching that, like, wow, they're pulling out all the stops there.
Caledonia and the Pacific, you mean?
Yeah. If they actually pull it off and they actually throw the French out, I think you'll see France go into even more chaos probably.
Well, and you know, the Chinese around the Pacific have been doing like mega projects, like, you know, we'll increase your pier side wharf from 200 feet in a 9-foot depth to 1,000 feet in a 30-foot depth. And we'll do all of that. You know, it's like building bridges in Africa, for example. Mm-hmm. But, and we'll also put in a 5,000-foot runway and bring your country into the modern world. Well, but they're also like opening themselves up. So what country is going to say no to that?
Right.
Right. 5,000, you know, we're going to go from a 2,000 to a 5,000-foot runway that can take like big jets. We're going to go from a 9-foot wharf to a 30-foot wharf that can take big ships, container, you know, like medium container ships. And the quid pro quo is we're even going to take your elite sons of Fiji and send them to universities in China for free. We're going to take all of the sons and daughters of the elite to China, get a great education, learn Mandarin, learn modern technology. And when they come back, they're like foot soldiers of China. And you can't blame them. I mean, it's like, it's not like nothing we ever did, you know, Agency for International Development, et cetera. Lots of scholarships back in America.
Oh, but yeah, they literally took a page out of our playbook and started going.
But we're just not playing it anymore. Meanwhile, we're trying to sell LGBTQ trans.
Yes.
And the world's not buying it. Wow. The generals that we trained, that the Niger generals that we trained, like at Kennedy School, etc., they have our troops pinned down on the base in Niger, and they allowed Russians to fly in. It's like mocking us. It's like a morale boost for the Russians. We're not seeing it on the media. There's a 1,000 American support troops and special forces that were running like the Predator base there in Niger to monitor Al Qaeda in Africa. And now we're like restricted to the base, and our State Department is so feckless. They won't just say like, we are coming in the easy way or the hard way, but we're getting our people out. I mean, even a George Bush would have done that. You know, just, we're going to start with Spectre gunships and wind up with troop transports, but we're getting our people out today. And if you want anything left in your capital, you better not stand in our way, right? We've got 1,000 troops stranded in Niger, and they invited Russian Wagner Group, you know, contract mercenaries onto the base. I would love to be there. Every time, no matter where I ever was, where special operations troops from opposing sides get together, I don't care what the officials try to do, they're going to be swapping MREs, hats, mm-hmm. insignias.
Oh, yeah.
Knives. Yes,
they are. Patches
it's,
now.
It's like the biggest coins. Status thing. It's yeah. For every Wagner to come home like with a green beret, or it's like.
Yeah. You know, it's going to be interesting.
You know, there's just crazy catch 22 things happening in like places like Niger right now, because the whole world outside of our media knows our sun is setting and their sun is rising. Yeah. And we are just being, you know, gaslit that we're still like mourning, you know, Reagan mourning in America. It's well, not.
That's a good place to. So let me ask you one last question, because we're coming up on an hour. How much time do you give the U.S.?
In economics, they say like there's no low where a stock price can't go lower, and there's no high where a stock price can't go higher. You know, that it's not the timing, the direction is very set. It's like watching a giant super tanker. The direction is very set. The timing of it is much harder. I think that the election is a very finite, you know, pivot time before the election, and depending on if say like, let's say Trump wins by such a margin, there's no way they can outcheat it, which is possible. Then they unleash the hounds of hell onto the street fighting. In all of this fog of war, a critical aspect is when you've invited in like the world's 10 worst mafias intact, just come in, just empty your prisons. So all the mafia guys in Venezuela that were in prison, now they're in America with the guys that weren't in prison. So you invite in 10 of the worst mafias, you invite in 10 jihad organizations, you invite in the Chinese Communist Party. What that means is in any kind of a street riot environment, the environment is completely ripe for a third party false flag where China says, now we do it. Kill their grid, blame the jihadis. Take down the grid, but leave jihad clues, right? That there's a playbook. There's like flip to contingency 3 alpha. That is okay. Take down the grid, make it look like the Jews did it. Take down the grid, make it look like the jihadis did it. Take down the grid, make it look like Russian cyber attack. There's like, you know, next page. So we won't, if the grid goes down, one thing you can take to the bank is whoever they said did it, didn't do it. But the whole world knows if they take down our grid, we'll finish the job ourselves. The whole world knows it. I just lost the sound.
Any last word for the audience? Sorry, Mike.
My book is supposedly like been printed and I should see it next week. Doomsday Reef, which is like an allegory for Western civilization. But I didn't write a book for several years because I was just, you know, not interested in writing another How We Went Into a Disaster. I think that's cooked, that's baked. It's what happens 10 years after that. How do you come back from that? The 10% that are still around.
And you said it'll be out a week or two. Is that what you're saying?
I should have the books next week. It's depending on when they're put on pallets and trucked. Then it takes a little longer to get into Amazon, but they'll be available for me. Then I got to work on putting out the Kindle version, which is maybe another week or two. It takes longer to get things vetted through the Amazon system. But when I have the books, I'll be able to send out my copies right away. As soon as I have the books, I got a lot of pre-orders.
That's Enemies Domestic.
This is called Doomsday Reef.
The website, Enemies.
Enemiesforeigndomestic.com. Yes. Yeah. And all the other books are on Amazon and Kindle and Audible. But if you want them signed by me, you can get them straight for me, which is better for me also. But the book Doomsday Reef, I'll have the hard copies probably next week. But the Audible and Kindle versions will take a little longer. And the hard copies through Amazon, you have to like send them a physical book. And, you know, they have their own bureaucracy before they put it up for sale. But yes, it'll happen. I've got 6 other books going there, so I haven't been canceled yet.
Sweet. Well, Matt, let's do this again in a few weeks and see where we are with the situation in New Caledonia, the situation in Ukraine.
Oh, and New Caledonia is just, there's like places all over the world that are just like, you know, apples ready to be pulled off of trees like that.
I agree. And I think that we'll have some fidelity on Gaza too. We didn't get to Gaza today, but we'll get there on the next round. So
Gaza Pier.
Yeah. Well, appreciate you doing this, brother. Always appreciate your time.
You're welcome.
We'll do this a couple of weeks. And I'll be back on Monday with a sit rep. God bless everybody. One team, one fight.
Good night.